Today is Monday, November 21st, 2022, and I want to say Boker Tov to everybody here. And some interesting material came in. A Talmud, Rabbi, I believe Rabbi Haber sent this to me, Rabbi Alexander Haber, and it's from a recent edition of Rabbi Yoelish on Parshat HaShavua, Kedushat Joel, and it's something that evidently was never published before, Parshat Chayei Sarah. And Rabbi Yoelish asked, and I imagine this is written up from talks he gave, I don't know if he wrote it up himself, but Hasidim wrote it up. It's a relatively new collection called Kedushat Joel, and he questions why Chazal had to stress that Sarah lived Me'ah Shana, V'Yeshrim Shana, V'Sheva Shanim, and Chazal say, Rashi quotes it, that she was always the same, always a tzaddikit. When she was 127, she was like she was 20 years, and 20 years like she was 7 years, she never sinned. Why is this so important? And Rabbi Yoelish said, because Avraham Avinu had a status of a Kohen, maybe even a Kohen Gadol. And how is he allowed to be Metameh himself? So they had to stress that Sarah Imenu was a tzaddikit. Kivrei tzaddikim einon metamim. But you see, they yet hear the name of Rabbi Yoelish that this does not apply today. In other words, they were worried here that if you could be Metameh yourself to Sarah Imenu, then why not to the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe? What Chabad does, they go to the grave. And the Chasam attacked them for that. So today we can't determine who's a tzaddik, right? Am I a tzaddik? Are you a tzaddik? Only the Ribbono Shel Olam knows. But they want to stress here, no doubt about it, Sarah Imenu was a tzaddikit, and therefore you can be Tameh yourself, but it doesn't apply to the right. All right, it's a nice Hasidic thought. From the point of view of Lamdus, I would imagine Kahuna begins with Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Bechor is supposed to do the Avodah, but they sinned with the golden calf, and therefore the Kohanim took over, Shevet Levi, etc. But okay, ein sholim al hadrush. Who gave this to me? Charlie, you, Morty. Morty, you gave it to me. So this too is fascinating that Rabbi Avram Blau, who was, I would say, the leading strength activist for Neturei Karta here, actually, I actually have a student that she wound up going to spend the Shabbos with him to write it up, for, turn paper for me, and that changed her entire life, Julie Frank. She lives in Israel today. And Rav Amram Blau comes to the Brisket of Rav Elville and says, my Rebbe is here, the Satmar Rav, what can I tell him? And this was when the Satmar Rav came that he was paying everyone off not to vote in the elections. Remember, this went on for decades, decades. The last election, I heard nothing about it, so it's either a sign that they've given up or a sign that they realize those who will vote, and those who won't vote, won't vote, but it has nothing to do with buying them off. And Rav Elville said, tell your Rebbe the following story, that a woman was standing, and he says, this is the Chafetz Chaim spoke about it, quotes the Chafetz Chaim, that a woman was standing in the shuk with a carton filled with apples that she was selling. And one man came along and he knocked it over, the apples rolled all over, and people were grabbing the apples, and the lady started to shout and scream and cry, it's her apples. And a wise man went by and said, what are you yelling? What are you shouting? Grab as many apples as you can, because otherwise you'll have nothing left to sell. The same thing the Vriska Rav said, tell the Sakhmirub, what is he yelling and shouting? Vote, elect, do what you can, so at least you can get something out of the apple pie. Everyone's grabbing government funding, etc., etc. It's a good vote. And a real Mizrahi, I would say, unfortunately, are good to think the same way today. Grab what you can, but we're not really part and parcel of the miracle. Okay, now, coming back here to the Rebbe, to Chabad, Rabbi Dalfin sent me a correction that I evidently said the Taalucha, where they would go to all the surrounding communities in Brooklyn on Yontif to teach, I said Tanya. So he says, Taalucha wasn't to teach Tanya, rather to share words of Hasidus from the Baal Tanya or the Rebbe or other Chabad Rebbeim. All right, I'll accept the correction. I should have said Hasidus, not Tanya. However, I accept the correction, I would say, half-heartedly, because you'll see from what I quote today that the real Machloket is over Tanya. So teaching Hasidus, you wind up teaching Tanya, and the Hasidim are angry. Jack Levinstein told me to clarify. I cited a memoir of someone who learned in Lakewood, and he told the story from, and I heard this, it was in the Israeli press as well at the time, when Rav Avadja came to Lakewood, the Sakhmi Chassidim called in a false alarm, fire department, anything to get the Rav Avadja silent. And Rav Shneur was then the Rosh Yeshiva, the son of Rav Aaron, and Rav Shneur was hysterical, and he yelled at them, what are you doing? Rav Aaron could learn just as well as your Rebbe. And Rav Aaron was Mechabed, Rav Avadja Yosef. The question is whether this Hasidim Satma learned in Lakewood. I don't know. In my time, when I was in Lakewood, there were 102 students, 103 students, and there were no Satma Chassidim. There may have been a few Chassidim, but certainly not Satma. I have the feeling that these were not Satma within the yeshiva, but without, because Lakewood today is a total mixture of every Chassidus and every type of right-wing yeshiva you can imagine has some sort of foothold in Lakewood. So I imagine it's outside the yeshiva, but if the person who sent me the source, I'm sure he'll be listening, if you wish, clarify it if I'm incorrect. Okay, now I want to go further, and what we saw last week, that at first when the Rebbe came to America, the Satmar Rav, I should say, he was not as strident, he was insecure, he was not sure of himself. He sought guidance, and among the people he turned to was the sixth Rebbe. Within 10, 15 years, Satma was entrenched in America. They had succeeded. The Malachim, the old-time Malachim, all-American born and raised, they gathered around Satma. All the Hungarians who survived, Munkacs, Satma, that entire school of thought carried around Rav Yoel Ish. And there were some real strident fights between Satma and other branches, particularly Chabad. Why was Chabad? Because Chabad too, when you talk about America, there are many Hasidiyot in America, but there are only two mainstream major Hasidiyot that have really taken root and have power and influence. All the politicians run after them. And it's between Lubavitch and Satmar. And at times it could get very nasty. We saw beards cut off, fist fightings. It was a sad period. And I would say this is the 60s into the 70s. And it went way beyond Hasidus and Chabad, and you know, the example with Rav Moshe on the Psaka of artificial insemination, it introduced a whole new concept in America that you persecute the person that you disagree with. And Rav Moshe was one. Rav Ben Zion Shurin, who wrote something against Satmar and their extremism in their tactics, he was another one, had to change his phone. And there was a rabbi in Williamsburg, and before you know it, they get phone calls. Rabbi Kirschblum, head of Mizrahi, he was killed. This one was killed. They frightened the family. These are scare tactics. And even Reb Lazer Silva, who after all was heads and shoulders above the crowd, even Reb Lazer Silva, when he criticized the Satmarov, they warned him, if you value your life, don't come near Williamsburg. But I want to go into a little bit detail now, and I want to cite the volume I introduced at the end of last week's year. Jerome Mintz. I never met him. I don't know if he knew an aleph from a bet. I have no idea. When you deal with Jews, professors in the Midwest, they can be intermarried, they can be totally assimilated. But as an anthropologist, as a sociologist, he really mastered the world of Satmar. It's a very fascinating volume. He wrote two volumes. He evidently knew Yiddish, because he translates from Yiddish to English, and I can tell by what I see in English that Azei Dafta sign in Yiddish, this has to be accurate. He wrote two volumes, and I'm quoting now from the second volume, Hasidic People, A Place in the New World. And it's a very fascinating volume where he deals with what has happened in America. It was published in 1992, so it makes it 30 years ago, but still information that's quite valuable. I'm quoting chapter 14, page 154, Satmar and Lubavitch in Conflict. And you see, and he understands what's happening. The Satmarov, let's go back to 1968, 1969, right after the Six-Day War. At that point, it's hard to say which Hasidus was bigger. But they were living Bishalom Bishalva. Satmar was not yet a major, major force. And Lubavitch was, I can't say was a major, major force, but as a result of the Six-Day War and the Tefillin campaign, they certainly were on the map. But now look what happens. The Lubavitch Rebbe is young, powerful. He's in his prime. The Satmarov, right after the Gulavi al-Tamura came out, suffered a major stroke. The truth of the matter is, and I'll show you sources, but not yet, that he really did not function for the last 10 years of his life. And only in Hasidus can this work. In other words, the Rav did not function basically the last 8 years of his life. Totally incapable of functioning, didn't leave his daughter's home, had care and help around the clock, but a Rosh Yeshiva, if you can't teach, if you can't give your students shas and paiskim and good shayurim, the Rosh Yeshiva has no role to play. With a Rebbe, with Satmar, between his wife, Rebbetzin Feige, and his Gabbai Ashkenazi and a few others, they literally held him up. He would appear in public. Occasionally he would speak. No one could understand him. The speech was slurred, but they held him in awe. But nevertheless, at this point, what is more attractive? What is more attractive? This Lubavitch Rebbe. He's young, he's active, he speaks, he's there, he's leading. And at that point, there was competition started building up, and from the Satmar point of view, Lubavitch was attracting. And there are many reasons. It's But the most focal reason is what I just said. You have an organization alive and kicking and doing whatever. I'll also add, and I say this and I say it again, I think it's critically important because during the past year or two, you had a tremendous low point in Satma, Shem Yerachem, two young ladies converted, baptized to Christianity. It was all over the internet, and it's probably on YouTube. And these were ladies from very prominent Satma families. These were not the Johnny-come-latelys. And anyone with a little seichel could understand. These people are looking for love, for positivism. Satma has a lot of negativism and a lot of enmity in it. It's part of Satma. Israel, all that goes on, demonstrations, this one is no good, that one is no good, this one is a shagetz. In all my years of teaching and so many shurma, you know, all my shurma original, I don't think there's anyone else in YU Torah that has on 1,600 plus original shayurim. I'm not giving shayurim in shas, I'm reading a text. That's a different type of shir. But I don't think there's anyone else with so many hand-created, handcrafted shiurim. So in all the years, I never got a hate letter from my shiurim. The one hate letter I got this year, I couldn't believe it. First of all, it should have been sent to me. It should have been censored. Someone should censor the letters. Why do you bother good people with terrible, criminal, sinful acts? But I got one hate letter. And if I can't even understand why they hate me so, but it had to do that I mentioned that the Vishnitz Rebbe, because Vishnitz is very different than other Hasidiyot. Other Hasidiyot, there's only one Rebbe. This is why there's Machloikis. But Vishnitz, anyone who has Vishnitz of blood and wants to be a Rebbe, Gesundheit. So there's one Vishnitz of brother in Muncie. And I mentioned he, of all the Vishnitz Rebbeim, he became a Satma. He's exactly Satma, looked up to the Satma Rav, the Satma thinking, etc., etc. And because I said this, I got a hate letter. I have no idea what I said wrong. I'm just stating a fact. But you see, it's that negativism. And Lubavitch, under the seventh Rebbe, and it already, I have to tell you, if you study Lubavitch honestly, Rakefet is 1,000,000% correct when he says in 1900, there was no difference between the Lubavitch thinking about Zionism and Munkach Satma thinking. No difference whatsoever. But as the years progress, it begins with the sixth Rebbe, but with the seventh Rebbe, it hits a crescendo. The outreach, the positivism, the love, and you know, the stories are legendary. You guy who would go to a Litvish guy like Rakefet, and you tell him, here's a sheikh, it's walking by, get him to put on tefillin. Rakefet will look at you, what are you out of your mind, that oishvav, that good for nothing, that trumpenik, I should waste my energies, what, he's going to put on tefillin, what, Chabad? Don't call him a Krumpenik. Don't call him a Neuswaff. He's related to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Morty, this is powerful. Powerful. So you see, Lubavitch was picking up from Satma already. Young people, intelligent people, teenagers, young adults. Why are we so negative? Why do we hate? Why can't we love? Why can't we be positive? And I have to say that Jerome or Jerry Mintz, and I'm sorry I never met him. I would love to really know who this man was. And if anyone knows, anyone listening, he's no longer alive. If anyone listening can enlighten me, I would be very thankful. And spurred by curiosity, by the heightened prestige of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was by then the survivor of the older generations of great Rebbeim. Some Satmar Yeshiva students were drawn to the excitement and spirit at the court of Lubavitch. Now, David, Mintz interviews a Satmar. This is what makes this work so fascinating, because this is not the scholar trying to guess. It's not the professor. This is a Satmar talking to him. And he gives you, again, it's done with anthropology and sociology. They have a way of doing it. They give you YA, and in back of the volume you'll see, it won't tell you YA, what his name is, but it'll tell you who he is, how old he was when he was interviewed. You get a feeling of who you're talking to. Quote, Lubavitch is strong all across the world. And yet during all these years until lately, he didn't even catch even one Satmar to him. Notice, Elliot, the English is not the best English. If you talk to a Satmar today, you'll be amazed how poor their English can be, and even accented. I told you, I said to a Satmar, where were you born? He looked, I was born in Borough Park. Borough Park or Budapest? Where were you born? You're born in Borough Park, speak English. I speak English, I speak Yiddish, I speak English, speak Hebrew, but my English is native English. Where were you born? Okay. But now it's a little different. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe is the oldest Rebbe in the world now, and he's considered the most respected one. There are always some young kids who feel they have to get the right Rebbe, and they conclude he's the right Rebbe. When the Satmar Rebbe was alive, it wasn't really too much of a danger for Satmar, because the Satmar Rebbe was so highly respected that they were, in effect, equal with Lubavitch. But even then, it was quite healthy for Satmar to have a little struggle with Lubavitch in order that nobody should think to go over to them. They should realize that the Lubavitcher Rebbe is a Shagetz, and that's it, quote, end quote. These are strong words, but this is the way they actually thought, and they could prove to you the Babajir Rebbe is a Shagetz. You understand? He accepts men and women, Mechalalei Shabbos, people Ochlein Avelet and Treifot. He sends people to Israel. He meets with Israeli government officials. The Satmar Rebbe is a Shagetz. Now, family loyalty is very important in Hasidus. I don't know, in the literature world, in the literature world we have a problem. The problem is very simple, that yeshivot were generally privately owned, family owned, so that it all remained in the family. Hakol nishab b'mishpacha. And certain yeshivas strived, certain yeshivas went under when you didn't have good family members to take over. The classic example is Telz. None of you will understand what I'm about to say. Maybe Morty remembers. When I was growing up, Telz was like the apex of the yeshivat in America. I had endless friends later in yeshiva college who all went to Telz for high school. Telz was such a pull. All right. Ultimately, Telz in Cleveland, in the suburb, in Wycliffe, it's not what it used to be, by far, because they try to keep it in the family, and you have to have that ability in the family. This is what makes YU or Torah Vadas very unique. These are institutions that are not family. They're communal institutions with a board of trustees. Teira Vadas could bring in a Rosh Yeshiva today who's a YU graduate, Reb Yitzi Lichtenstein. I mean, just think. All right, his mother will tell you, Tova will tell you, that Yitzi was never a YU person. It's true, Yitzi was always right. He was born with that right-wing tendency. But nevertheless, he's the grandson of Rav Soloveitchik. He's the son of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, you understand? His smicha is from YU, whether you like it or not. These are the facts. And they brought him in. why you? Here, I'm teaching, why you? All right, it's true, maybe they owe me a little bit. I got them this campus. I gave them $100 million, chinam. They didn't have to even give me covered. You follow me? Generally, when a wealthy guy gives you $100 million, Rabbi Revel used to say, whenever he got heavy money, he would tell his Rebbets and Mrs. Revel, Chayasara, COD, covered on delivery. But that's not the reason I'm teaching. I'm teaching here because I have what to offer. Baruch Hashem, they let you. They don't look who you're married to in Yichas. Now, with the Hasidic world, yes, Yichas plays a tremendous role. You can't be a Rebbe unless you have the family Yichas. On the other hand, Hasidim can decide. If the Rebbe is not on the level, there's a different Rebbe to go to. You follow me? You can move back and forth. Chassidus, there's a pro and con on either side of the ballpark. But what's fascinating here is when you talk about family, there's something to being a Hasid. In other words, it's like a Yankee fan. You're a Yankee fan. You grow up, I hold it to be a tribal relationship. You grew up in Baltimore, the Orioles, Brooklyn, what the Brooklyn Dodgers. I mean, I'm telling you a fact, David, that you can look it up. When O'Malley took the Dodgers out of Brooklyn to San Francisco, people committed suicide that night. I mean, this is true. People committed suicide. People got drunk and bought. You see, this works in Chassidus, that you're a Satmar, your father was a Satmar, your grandfather was a Satmar. You follow, there's something, my wife is, that comes from Stump, from Belza. Oh, it goes all the way back. My wife's great-great-grandfather was the Shliach Tzibur for the Sah Shalom, for the first Belza Rebbe. By the way, his wife's name was Malka. And the Sah Shalom used to say that if Malka is the queen, then I'm the king. You follow? He gave all the credit to his wife. But there's something there. See, in the literature world, I don't think this exists. I can be a graduate of Slabodka, of Mir. My son wound up in YU in Yeshivas Chochan, and my son wound up in Lakewood. And he doesn't have to go to Slabodka or Mir. He has to go where he's happy, where he's learning. He has a good Rosh Yeshiva. You don't have that feeling, mein Tata is given a Slabodka, and the Zayd is given in Slabodka. But in Hasidus it works. And this is why there's a whole added element. When you switch Yeshivat, you're not harming your family. When a Satma becomes a Lubavitcher, it hurts the family. It's spitting in the face of your forebears. You follow me? And this too plays a big role. If kids are starting to leave Satma for Lubavitch, this hurts. It hurts the father, it hurts the grandfather. You're sinning against your great-grandparents. Look, go to the burial ground in Hungary, generations of Satmar Munkacsa, and you little good-for-nothing are spitting on our face and going to the Lubavitcher Sheikhs. See, this too plays a role. Now, beginning on page 155, he tells us a story, describes a situation, and here you have a classic story of Hasidiyot in conflict. There was a young man growing up in Williamsburg, I should say, Rabbi Mendel Vechter, Vechter. He was a real Talmud Chacham. And here you have to understand, look, we're all good kids, we went to yeshiva, but you know, I look back in my time in yeshiva, and my brother will certify what I'm about to say. All right, we were good kids. Anything wrong with Arnie Rothkopf, Howie Kitovitz? I can give you names. went on to become big Marbitzei Torah. But there was one kid that was totally different. A kid named Heshi Schachter. This kid, we had a teacher. I write about this in Washington, but let me tell the story here. We had a teacher from it. You know, we were wild yeshiva kids who had respect for teachers. We had one teacher for mathematics in 7th grade, 8th grade, Ann Tamor, T-A-M-O-R. We kids feared her. I don't know, she had a certain personality, a certain gestalt. She walked into the class. This was a teacher, you don't play games with, you don't throw spitballs at. I never write on the board. Elliot can tell you in BMT I never wrote on the board. Since 1969, I never write on the board. Yomo, do you know why? Because before 69, when I was teaching high school kids, MTA, in Yeshiva Yisrael Chanan, I'd write on the board, spitballs hit me from all sides. And Tamar, Morty, you don't play games with. So she, you know, kid, suddenly she, did you do your homework with the, my brother and Heshi, Lenny and Heshi were classmates. Lenny Rothkopf, did you do your homework? Yes, Mrs. Tamar. Let me say, well, beautiful. Heshi Schachter, did you do your homework? No. What? What are you wasting time? How do you come to class? No homework. Mrs. Tamar, my father gave up a big rabbinate in Philadelphia so I could have a yeshiva day school education. I'm here to learn Gemara, not mathematics. Wow. We were sitting, Levy told me he walked out. My brother was pale, shocked, pallid. Lenny, what happened? My brother's Levy today, but then I was Arnie, he was Lenny. Lenny, what happened? Arnie, you wouldn't believe it. What Heshi said to Mrs. Tamar, he told me the story. I was shaking, my teeth were falling out. Rebbeinu Shelayim. So you see, sometimes, I can tell you even Fred, let me tell you, let me reveal all secrets. Years later, we're in the Rav. I was officially in the Rav's class 57. 58 already, Heshi Schachter was sneaking in, sitting in back, a little kid. So one time, and he was sitting way in back, no one should see him. You know, he's there illegally. So one time we were sitting around with the Rav, and the Rav says, tell me, who are the good young men coming up? And we said, this one, the Rav knew, this one, that one. He said, Rebbe, you're missing the best. That little kid in back hiding there, Heschel from Philadelphia, he's the best of the young generation. The Rav didn't even know him, but we already knew this kid is destined for greatness. So you see, I'm giving you this introduction. Now let's get down to Chabad and Satmar. There was this kid, Mendel Wechter. He was born in Hungary. He might have gotten out in 56. You know what I'm talking about, right? The Hungarian Revolution, and a lot of Jews got out, ran out from Jews. It was a miracle. You could buy them out. It was a certain period, a few months, where you could actually buy them out, pay the government, and out they go. So a lot of from Jews got out. And he may be from that crowd, and he comes to Williamsburg. He already was after Bar Mitzvah, and everyone looked up to him. This kid, his ethical character, it was said that he practiced what he preached, and that he made continual efforts to strengthen his character. In other words, this kid went out of the way, not just learning, but a mensch. People looked up to him. This youngster has it. And in 1969, he opened his own yeshiva in Williamsburg. And he gathered around him students, various Hasidic courts, beyond their bar mitzvah, 14 or 15 years old. He selected 15 top, over a dozen top students, the most gifted, to continue his studies with him. And in addition to Shas and Paiskim, he studied the classics of Hasidic thought. And when, if you're going to study Hasidic thought, you're going to study from the Rebbeim. The primary work, and here's where I said Hasidic, and Rabbi Dolphin corrects me, but the primary work that they studied when they wanted Hasidic philosophy was Tanya. And suddenly here, someone of Satma origins and a top Talmud Chacham, a young man of tremendous promise, he's in his 20s now and he has a whole group around him. And in addition to everything that he's teaching Tanya. So they interview one of the students. I'm quoting now a live interview again with the social anthropology rules. I was at the yeshiva from 1975 on. The youngest students was 14 and most were 15 and 16 years old. We learned Chabad Hasidicism throughout our years in Mendel Wexter's yeshiva. We were taught Tanya, and we studied writings of the other Lubavitcher Rebbes. In the first years when he taught me, he was not a Lubavitcher. He studied Chabad Hasidus, and he wanted to know more and more. He got in touch with people in Lubavitch, and increasingly barriers fell away. He found that the Lubavitchers were God-fearing people, pious and elite, and that what he had been taught about them was totally unfounded. And you see, this is, I can just tell you from my own life, I, with all my heart and soul, wanted to learn in Lakewood, remain in Lakewood, not go to college. Leave bichashka b'Torah. All right, I don't have to apologize. I have a right to have been like that. And my parents were very upset, particularly my mother. My mother ran the house. It was not my father. My mother and father never graduated college, but they both went to college and they fell away when the Depression came. They had to go to work to help support their families. But my son is not going to go to college, very upset. All right, so I'm in Lakewood and I hear so much bad about YU, and I make a deal with my parents. I'll try Yeshiva College for 1 year. And if I don't like it, I can go back to Lakewood and they won't interfere. All right, they made the deal with me. Now I come to my very first class in Yeshiva College. If I've told you this and remember it, stop me. But it's September 1955. And my first class is the first lecture by a new professor, someone named Louis Feldman, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. And Louis Feldman comes into class and he gives out sheets with sources on the Hittite code and the Hammurabi code. And to quote the Medrash about Yaakov Avinu from last week's Parsha, I felt Poltkin Tachtav Pitchei Gehenim. Or this week's Parsha, I should say. Yaakov robbed the bracha and Esav comes in, Yitzchak Avinu feels Poltkin Tachtav Pitchei Gehenim. I look, what are we going to learn? Hittite code, Hammurabi code. And all that I heard in Lakewood against Yeshiva College comes to the fore, and I'm ready to buy a ticket to get on the bus back. Like, and Louis Feldman begins the lecture, and he says, we who believe in Torah, we don't need any outside proof. But sometimes when you have outside proof, it helps you in influencing others to come under the wing of Torah Hashem. And he goes on to give a lecture on the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. And by the way, I found this later, that German Rabbanim professors took the same approach. There's an entire volume written where you see this in great detail. And Professor Feldman shows how the Hittite code and the Hammurabi code, when you divide it up, it's the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. Except you see the influence of the sinful human being when Torah was more stringent, seven mitzvot, they're more lenient on certain issues because the flesh is weak. And I couldn't get over that lecture. I walked out of there, the happiest yeshiva college person in the world. We never looked back. With all due respect to Lakewood, YU is an, I don't know today, I can't talk about YU today, but in my time, what an amazing place. You could learn on the highest level, it's no different than Lakewood, and you could have a nice, wonderful liberal arts education. So, you see, you begin a certain way, but then your eyes open, you start to think. Satma told you. What did you hear the other Satma guy say? The Lubavitcher Rebbe is nicht mehr wie a Shegetz. He's a Shegetz. Nothing more than a Shegetz. And here this Rabbi Vechter starts learning Hasidus and he talks with Lubavitchers. And wow, they're good people. It's not what I was taught. And remember, there's only Lubavitch today. This is after the Satmaruv's 69 already, he stopped functioning. Now, this Rabbi Wechter, he has a real problem. Why does he have a real problem? First of all, he's teaching his yeshiva. All the kids come from Satmar background. Secondly, he comes from Satmar background. It's what I told you a few minutes ago. You know, you don't smack your parents' face. I have a different feeling. I would love if one of my grandchildren became a chassid. I would love if one of my grandchildren went to Panovich. It's a seder. It's add spice to life. All right, I wound up... my grandchildren are clones of their parents, of their grandparents. Maybe it's a compliment to us. You follow me, Avi? But I have a different point of view. I don't mind seeing different concepts. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. The Rav's one son-in-law was no less than a Hasidic Rebbe, the Talmud Rebbe, Professor Tweskin, the Rav's son-in-law. They say I still remember this, when Atara and Yitzchak got engaged, so the word came back from Boston. What was it like? We were curious kids. What was it like? It's like Mashiach had come. The Rav dancing with the Talmud Rebbe. You follow me, Morty? The Rav dancing with the Talmud Rebbe. They were Machatanim now. Okay. But Satmar... you're dealing with Satmar kids. Be careful. But not only that, your family. Don't spit in your father's face. Not only that, his wife was employed as a teacher in one of the Satmar high schools for women. So there's a lot of parnassa upstairs. A lot of parnassa involved. You have to be careful. And he's caught in a quagmire. It's not like someone today, there's someone I know, a good friend of mine, a YU, a total YU family. All his kids are Haredim. You have other people, YU people, total YU. Kids are Breslov. Kids are Lubavitch. Here, it's his father, Satmar, his grandfather, Satmar. Okay. Now, here's an interview with another Satmar Chassid. There was a devout Satan Chassid who lived upstairs in the same building as our yeshiva. This is where a kid, Satan Chassid, who came to his yeshiva at night, he studied privately with boys of the yeshiva. At that time we were studying a book of Rabbi Joel Teitelbaum, in keeping with the mood. Everything that the neighbor mentioned was not only anti-Zionist, but anti-Lubavitch. You follow me? They're in this building. There's a neighbor upstairs. The neighbor upstairs is Satmar. These kids are studying in the yeshiva. They're studying. This person hangs out with them. And at night he studied privately with boys of the yeshiva. He was studying either Al-Hagulavi, Al-Hatmurar, or studying by Yoel Moshe. He's studying from the Satmar. And not only anti-Zionist, but anti-Lubavitch, and he cursed the present Lubavitcher Rebbe. This is not just calling him a sheikh, but he maledicted him. He cursed him. I don't have to tell you. There's no other language in the world that has such geschmacka klolas. How do you translate geschmacka? such sweet, good, tasty curses like the Yiddish language. You can't equal it in any other language. I'll give you an example. Yeah. Zoltus Beleven Brengen Ayatakta Sahupa and Hobinacha. A heart attack when you step under the chuppah. You should live to take your daughter to chuppah and drop dead with a heart attack under the chuppah. No, you can't. Avi, can you equal that curse? I don't think so. Oh my gosh. So this guy curses the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The next morning when we were studying in the yeshiva, one of the boys told Mendel Vechta of the session of the previous night, and the curse against the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And Mendel Vechter, though he could have been silent until then, could not tolerate the cursing of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He argued that no one has the right to curse someone with whom he disagrees, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe has a right to his own viewpoints. The discussion lasted for 6 hours, and it became very heated. During that time, certain opinions that Mendel Vechter had been protecting slipped out. You follow? This is Chabad, this is Satmar. This is Hasidiyot in conflict. This is a world war. The students told him what happened the night before. 6 hours wasted. I'm a Litvak. Shas Paiskin, what are you wasting 6 hours for? 6 hours wasted on the whole discussion. And Rabbi Vechter became very upset. It's one thing to differ, but to curse the Lubavitcher Rebbe? Well, they continued to interview. The word went out. People were talking. 12, 15 kids went home, and each one told their parents. Parents told their neighbors, and now everyone was gossiping. This Rabbi Vechter is a closet Lubavitcher. People started to demand, Rabbi Vechter, did you become a Lubavitcher? And he had to take a low profile. People took sides in the community at that point. He didn't say anything so terrible. He only advocated someone's right to his opinion. He didn't deny what he said, but he had to play it down and say it didn't indicate he was a Lubavitcher. But other people, someone else now was speaking, they pushed him to the wall that he had to recant and attack the Lubavitcher and show his faith in Satmar. He refused to do that. As a result, the parents took the boys out of the yeshiva. Then the yeshiva closed. 1981. And you see what happened. Mendel Vechter had no panasa. His wife was fired. She had no panasa. They moved to Borough Park. Borough Park was not Williamsburg, not a Satmar stronghold. And ultimately, and we'll be happy, they moved to Israel and became part of the Lubavitcher movement here. And if anyone knows where Rabbi Wechter is today, I hope he's alive. He has to be about my age, came out 56, a teenager, a drop younger than I am. I'd be happy to know how his aliyah worked out. And he goes on and on with the young men who studied in the yeshiva with Rabbi Wechter. Here's another chassid being interviewed. Rabbi Wechter had planted a seed and we began to think on our own. Mendel Vechter brought us closer to the idea of the Lubavitcher way of thinking. But he did not bring us to Lubavitch. All the students realized that he was the Lubavitcher. The boys really loved him. Some of us had disputes at home about Lubavitch. We began to go to Lubavitch on our own. I studied Hasidus and my mind was open to Chabad Hasidus. But I never dreamt of becoming a Lubavitcher. The yeshiva closed. And 10 or 15 young men remained with him in spirit. Those who stayed with him became Lubavitchers during the next 5 years. Some moved away, but retained their old ties. Some fled without looking back, and others drifted back to Satmar under the weight of familiar and public pressure. So you see here, you're being introduced already to a new concept that we're going to see in great detail. Lubavitch. Some of them went on to become Lubavitchers. Some of them fled entirely from the scene. Who needs this machloikis? Not Lubavitch and not the Satmar. Plague on both your houses, as the expression goes. And some remained Satmar, not because they wanted to, but you have a family, public pressure. You can't break with everything. And you have this time and again, someone who wears the uniform, the portable ghetto. Many of them, they're closet Zionists, broad. How can I break with my family? You have that today here, the chief of staff. For the first time, we're going to have the Ramatkal Shomer Shabbos. The first time. But he doesn't wear a kippah. You see, he's really Shomer Shabbos. He speaks about his translucent kippah, his transparent kippah. You don't see it, but it's there. But you see, you're caught. Which world are you part of? He couldn't break entirely with the world he grew up in. It's part of the big world around him. On the other hand, you see, caught between. Where do you draw the line? Why not put on a kippah? If you notice his picture when he was drafted, the army has a picture of anyone who ever was drafted, and they must have a picture of what I looked like back in 76. Has a kippah. You follow? But you see, you're caught. Some of them really are not Satmar anymore. But what the heck? My father's a Satmar. My grandfather's a Satmar. I work with Satmar. My panas is from Satmar. Who the heck cares? I married a girl from a Satma family. She doesn't know the difference. Yes, Satma, not Satma. Why should I have set up? All right, so my kids will go to Satma and be Satma. So what? It's fascinating. You can meet people, and we're going to meet them, who are dressed like Siddham and Satma and are very distant on a practical level, even though halacha l'maisa, there's no difference between them and the Satma on the right and the Satma on the left. And here, finally, another Talmud of his, I never connected our studies to Lubavitch, which was a separate world apart from ours. It wasn't until years later that I became a Lubavitcher Chassid. At first, I denied my affiliation, and finally, over the years, I came to admit it. At first, we denied it to our parents. Finally, my wife and myself said to them, we're Lubavitchers, and we're proud of it. Okay, so that's one story. Rabbi Mendel Wächter, if someone wants to do a movie, a documentary, this is a good study of an individual, Satma, roots, upbringing, exposure, straddling the fence, and ultimately refusing to maledict the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and everyone says, you're a traitor to Satma, has to give up the yeshiva, his wife is fired, Borough Park in place of Williamsburg, and ultimately Kvar Chabad in place of Borough Park. Now, there's another story here that is one of the most famous stories. I spoke about it last week, the beard cutting, and I can tell you that this too, as I recall, was on Israeli TV. It was on American TV. In my humble opinion, it was one great Chilul Hashem. Once Mendel Wächter, once the word went out that there's Lubavitch, it's not so terrible, you can be positive, you can adopt it. It was only a matter of time before the example of Mendel Wächter's students was to be emulated by others. And this has to be already in the 1980s. Several young men of Satma began visiting the Lubavitcher Center at 770 Eastern Parkway. It came as no surprise to Rabbi Pinchas Korf, a well-known Lubavitcher teacher, when David Cohn, an 18-year-old Satma Chassid who had been a student of Mendel Wächter, approached him and asked to study the Tanya with him. You see, here's a kid, a product of the yeshiva. He's now 18, he's maturing, he's a young adult, and he wants to study Tanya. And he approaches Rabbi Karf, who was a popular teacher and considered to be a man of learning, piety, and goodwill. He was modest and retiring in appearance and in action. And even Satma Chassidim, who knew him, testified to Rabbi Karf's good nature. And Rabbi Karf at the time was 46. He had come to New York 30 years earlier in 1953 from the city of Kharkov in the Ukraine where Yomo was born. He was considered, I said in the Ukraine, particularly gifted in conveying the religious philosophy of Lubavitch. And this kid gets in touch with him, and the kid's father is all upset. My son is going to study Tanya. My son is going to study with Lubavitcher. So his father said, you can only meet him in my frame shop. Evidently he had a store in Williamsburg where they frame pictures, and the father wants, there you can meet him, and the father can keep his ears on what is happening. All right, it's right next to, it's on the border. They describe it on the periphery of the settler community at Broadway and Union Street. I don't know Williamsburg that well, but it's at the end of Williamsburg. Its proximity to Satmar made Rabbi Korff somewhat uneasy, but nevertheless, he agreed to go. And here is Rabbi Korff speaking. I teach Chassidus everywhere. If someone wants me to teach Chassidus, I teach him Chassidus. The boy asked me to teach him. He came to 770. He has Satmar friends who had become Lubavitchers. They're a group of boys who became Lubavitcher Chassidim. They were friendly with him. They knew him. But he asked me by himself. He came to ask me to teach him. I taught only him. I made a date with him to teach him every Friday. He said his father will allow me to teach him, but only in his store and nowhere else. We met only two times in his father's store. His father was there and listening. All right? The Satmar viewed it. When he, Korff, came to teach, he wants you to become a Lubavitcher. His idea of coming here and telling you how to be Jewish is not his intention. He is covering up his motives. It's not an issue of religion. It's an issue of the technique and what they stand for. Why does he have to come here and teach Tanya? Was Tanya his message? What the reason he has to come to a basement in Williamsburg in a Williamsburg factory to teach Tanya? Why? Tanya is taught elsewhere. Everyone knows Tanya is good as Korff. The message behind it was more important than the Tanya. Come to Crown Heights. Join us at Lubavitch. And here it's a sad story. Here's Korff coming, teaching this kid. Evidently, his father may have had a manufacturing place. It's a basement. On top is a frame store. The father is listening. And the next time he comes, five men suddenly enter the room, throw him to the ground. And he's worried stiff they're going to break his bones. No, we're not going to break your bones. We're just going to cut off your beard. And you have to understand, cutting off a beard, Abe, you had a beard, you didn't have a beard. Beard, Johnny come lately, a trim beard. Not the end of the world if they cut off your beard. Lubavitch, not allowed to touch your beard. You can tell a Lubavitcher beard, just look at it. Law and those that have the ability to grow. Not everyone can grow a big beard. It depends on your genes, your chromosomes, I would imagine. But Lubavitch, here's my Talmud. You know that he's been after me for decades. Rebbe should have a beard. A beard? And Korff pleads with them, don't cut off my beard. You're not allowed to do it. They held him down, cut off his beard, and he said, not cutting one's beard is very important to Lubavitchers. Our people in Russia went to jail for not cutting their beards. You understand the Mesirat Nefesh of the Lubavitcher, and wow. Well, this attack on Rabbi Korff became a cause celebre. The attack took place late Friday afternoon on Erev Shabbat. The Lubavitchers could not respond until Saturday night. And when the Shabbos ended, their actions spoke directly to the Satmar community. All kosher foods prepared under the rabbinical supervision of Satmar were banned. Rabbi Yisrael Shem Tov of Lubavitch expressed Lubavitch's irritation to the press. Quote, how can we trust them to supervise food when they cannot supervise their own people? Ah, the Satmar were furious. They banned Satma Hashgacha, I don't think until today you're going to find Satma eating from the... you're not going to find Lubavitcher eating from the Satma Hashgacha. Some of the Lubavitchers, there were interviews here, I don't want to bore you with all the details, but some of the Satma got up and said, oh, so they banned us, so we sell less. No Satma food purveyor went out of business as a result. In other words, Satma is big enough that whether you like the Hashgacha or don't like the Hashgacha, they can survive on their own. The Lubavitcher Rebbe out of Habrenyin, right after this incident, got up and said, you know, without referring to the incident in public, he said, but I understand there's been some tension. Chas v'chalila, we should fight back. Fighting back will not solve any of these problems. We have to be generous, forgiving, positive, and continue with our special message of Avat Yisrael. And no Lubavitcher lifted a hand to a Satma. You should know that the grand jury investigated. There was an attempt to indict the people who attacked Rabbi Korff, but it never was able to succeed. Why? Because they couldn't positively identify who the attackers were. So you can understand why, in a case like this, the evil, I'll say, wins out. You can't indict, can't identify, can't be certain, can't be sure, and no one went to jail, even though the police investigated and did the best they could. On June 20th, 1983, a few weeks after the Rabbi Korff incident, as Rabbi Wechter was leaving his home on 54th Street in Borough Park for morning prayer services, five men, their faces covered by masks, grabbed him, shoved him into a van. In the course of the struggle, the rabbi's left ankle was fractured. The men beat him, cut off his beard, and added to his humiliation, left him on the street wearing only his underwear. This is Rabbi Wechter. Then afterwards, he picked up and left, went to Israel. Now here, you should know, they had photographs. I don't know if it was that. Today, their cameras all over. It's amazing what goes on. You look at New York, and they show you people being beaten, being robbed, being slashed, and it's all recorded. But then you got to catch them. They're wearing masks. You don't know who. Here they had photos the police had taken of likely suspects. Rabbi Korff had been able to identify one of the assailants, Jacob Cohn, who was employed in the Satmar office in charge of financial aid for students. And here too, ultimately, no charges were pressed. Why? People were afraid to identify. Families involved. Rabbi Wechter himself couldn't be certain. They all got away with it. Rabbi Wechter, he ran away. That was his solution. But nothing came out of it on a legal area. Okay. So this shows you the tension, the depth, the Chilul Hashem, the fighting, the cutting off beards, the news in America, TV, the Israeli TV. On page 166, he has an interesting description here which validates what I said. This Jacob, who we mentioned, who was he? He worked for Satma. He himself, he ran the office, student aid, kept records, evidently was an accountant, knew what to do. He claimed he was not a Satma. Who was he? He was a Malach. And the malachim, those who remained malachim, see this, they gravitated towards Satmar. Satmar welcomed them. The malachim, they haven't been totally researched. One day I hope I'll see a PhD thesis. But the malachim were American kids who wanted no part of the compromise with the American scene. And this is what we spoke about years ago. Terah Vadas was a compromise. Who heard of going to high school, getting a high school degree? Who heard of letting kids out to go to Brooklyn College at night? Terah Vadas was a compromise. Mr. Mendelovich threw them out. That's the tshuva of Rabbi Baumel. And Mr. Mendelovich threw them out for fear they would corrupt all of Terah Vadas. And here, Satmar came to America. They found their home. And Jacob Cohen, when he was arrested, when they investigated, I'm not a Satmar. I'm a Malach in terms of present-day actions, ideology, dress, and physical location. The line between the Satmar and the Malachim is difficult to distinguish. In terms of lineage, however, the Malachim are more closely related to Lubavitch than to Satmar. If their religious leader, the Malach, that's Rabbi Levine from Washington Avenue in the Bronx, had not quarreled with Rabbi Yosef Schneerson, the sixth Rebbe, the Malachim would have developed a significantly different perspective or might have been absorbed into Lubavitch altogether. But they differed. They considered the Lubavitch a Rebbe, a Shagetz, the sixth Rebbe. He had secular books, and they were waiting to be picked up. A Satmar leader corroborates Cohen's account of his religious legacy. Again, this is the Satmar speaking. He was originally a Lubavitch Hasid. He was disappointed in Lubavitch. There were a few like him, young people who were impressed by Lubavitch and then went there, and finally they were very disappointed because here there is a branch of Lubavitchers, the Malachim, and they are in a fight with the Lubavitcher. So they were attached to that group and they became enemies of the Lubavitcher. So if they are enemies of the Lubavitcher, they came to us. Today I consider Cohen to be a Satmar Chassid. He davens here. He is considered one of us. But what do you mean by a Satmar Chassid? Now this is very important. Satmar is not a sect like Lubavitch. Satmar is broader. You can have people who come in and out of our Beis Medrash that never had to do with Satmar, but they are followers, they sympathize with us, and they have their children here. In Lubavitch, there is no such thing that someone should be a Lubavitch chassid and should not keep the Rebbe as a saint. Here it is more liberal. Yomo, here's a Satmar chassid claiming that Satmar is more liberal than Lubavitch. Morty, he has hit the nail on the head. There is a vast difference between how Satmar developed and Lubavitch. Could very well be that because the Satmar Ruv took ill in 1969, at that time Satmar was not so big. Could be the original Satmar worshipped the Rebbe like a true chassid. Nowadays, 60 years later, 50 years later, Satmar is massive. It's nowhere near intense as Lubavitch. Satmar represents, we dress a certain way. We have a certain belief, portable ghetto. We don't want our kids to be defiled by the modern way of life, by the American way of life, by the Yeshiva University way of life. Satmar, all right, technically anti-Zionist, joined the crowd. Satma. You can go into homes that identify with Satma. No picture of the Rebbe on the wall. At the most, one picture, perhaps of Rav Yoyelish, perhaps of the Rebbetzin Feger. Lubavitch, much more intent. He calls it a cult. Many of people have called it a cult. You go in, I'll tell you what happened to us, B'didi Haviyuvda. We're in Sydney, Australia. That Shabbat, I'm the guest of Rabbi Moshe Gutnick. Rabbi of Beit Din, Sydney, Chabad, famous Gutnick family. Baruch Ato Adonai Elohim Melech Olam Shekol Yevet Vero. Elliot, we come into the house before Shabbos, honored guest from Yerushalayim, and we can't believe it, in Sydney, Australia, every space on the wall, a different portrait of the Rebbe. Rebbe was photogenic, no question about it. You would never see that in a Satmar house. Morty, you reading me?
So why would Satmar have a picture of
Lubavitcher? No, no, it's main as the Satmar Rebbe, the gate, the state, the tut, the red. I'll entertain you now. Gotta have a little laugh. Abe, I look at Malka, Malka looks at me. What are we doing here? What's this? Sorry. Worse than that, Rabbi Gutnick is not there. Go to Davin, no Rabbi Gutnick. When I'm walking to his house, the president of the community, and I say, we're the guest of Rabbi Gutnick. Actually, I had spoken to shul. It's the one time I've spoken to shul where the rabbi didn't introduce me. I introduced myself. I said I would never speak in a shul. I'm a guest. The rabbi, I need his permission. But since I'll be back in Jerusalem next week, I'm taking the liberty of speaking without the rabbi I spoke. And big crowd gathers around me afterwards. You know, kids are in love with what they heard and the present of Mizrahi and whatnot. And suddenly we see a little man walking. Oh God, beard. That's the rabbi. Get to the house. His wife apologizes. He's davening. We see all the pictures. Can't understand what's going on. All right, now let me tell you what went on. Number one, he's the Av Beis Din of Sydney and New Zealand. New Zealand doesn't have a big enough kahila to have its own Av Beis Din. There was a get that had to be given in New Zealand. The get was given Thursday evening, and the rabbi was going to fly back on the first flight Friday morning. From New Zealand to Sydney, it's an hour and a half. It's no big deal. It was heavy rain and fog. Flights couldn't take off. Finally, the flight took off. And he's now in a cab, and he recognizes, and his wife told us this has happened a few times before. He's been visiting people in jail. He couldn't get out of jail. It was a fog. He's in a cab. He sees it sunset. He tells the driver of the cab, take my suitcase to this address. Here's 50 Australian dollars. Tell my wife where you let me off, so she'll know how long walking back will take. I'm a rabbi, I can't be in a car on Shabbat. So that explains why he was late and why he was davening. Now we're looking at the pictures, and somehow we hear Kiddush, fine, and I say to my wife, or she says to me, Fawlty Towers. Are you familiar with the English BBC classic of Fawlty Towers? It's, I think, 12 chapters. Halavai they would have made more. It's the funniest BBC sitcom ever made. So we quoted from Fawlty Towers, don't mention the war. And I, whatever he said, don't mention the... And his The rabbi looks at us and he says, "You too? We had the greatest time of our life with the Rebbe looking at us from all angles. We acted out endless scenes from Fawlty Towers." Then we asked them, "How do you know Fawlty Towers?" So this lady said, "You don't know what it means for us to have you, Rabbi Rakefet. I'm from Cincinnati. You wrote that fabulous volume on Reb Lazer Silver and put Cincinnati on the map, the Silver Era." And she says, "I didn't want to marry my husband. I'm a Chabadnik, but he's taking me to Australia. He promised me 1 month a year we come back to my parents' house in Cincinnati. The minute we come back every summer, we go into the basement. The children are left for my parents to take care of, let them enjoy their grandparents, and we take the videos of Fawlty Tower and watch all 12 every summer, time and time again. Don't mention the war." Okay, my dear students, this hits the nail on the head. This will explain to you next week's lecture when we visit Palm City, Kiryat Yoel. You see, this is exactly Satma. A Lubavitcher, there's no half-hearted Lubavitcher. When you're a Lubavitcher, it's belay the nefesh. And if you're a real Lubavitcher, you're really to undergo a shlichut. And Lubavitchers wind up flying or going to communities where there's no Chal of Yisrael, where there's no Shechita, where there's nothing. You have to start from scratch. Show me one Satma willing to do that. Lubavitch, he's right. You're a sect. And the Rebbe, and right now as we speak, when we speak at this moment, the Shluchim Conference, and you're going to hear, what are there, 6,000 Shluchim from all over the world in Crown Heights at this moment. And George Rowe is the top speaker at the first session. You got to know who George Rowe is. Achad me'gedolei ha'tomim, billions of dollars to charity. I know him personally. He's a tzaddik, a real tzaddik. When he would come to Israel, I can tell you, he loves Balei Tshuva. He's overwhelmed. So he gave the Shvutamim, Balei Tshuva. They come to the King David. George Rowe is not Aaron Rakefet. He can afford the Waldorf Astoria 1 million times over. Come to the King David. There's no Waldorf Astoria yet. His wife goes to the pool. She has the right to go to the pool, enjoy herself. Immediately comes the Shvutamim. To the Beis Medrash, we had a yeshiva all in Russian to see, and he was like overwhelmed. This is his life. All the money they made, it's South American money now and American money. What George wrote, he's the guest speaker. And every speaker will cite the Rebbe, the Rebbe, the Rebbe, the Rebbe. It's unbelievable. This is Chabad. Satmar, right, they'll cite Rabbi Yoelish. They fight with Moshe, but it's not the same. Satma, they're dead. Lubavitch, when they cite them, they're alive. They're doing, they're influencing. Medafreng in covet from Rebbe, you have to bring covet to the Rebbe. Shluch, shaluach, you have to do your job. Wow. Okay. And here, they interview another Satma Chasev. Just listen. "I don't want my children should be fooled that a person comes from a graveyard every day and tries to fool people that he, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, spoke to his father-in-law. This is idiocy and plain thievery." You follow? The Lubavitcher Rebbe once a week would go to the grave of his father-in-law. Rav Shmai Guraye said, "I also can go to the grave of my father." That, again, come back to my lectures on who should become the seventh Rebbe. Shmaygar was the elder son-in-law. So he once said, "I also go to the grave. I also ask my father-in-law questions. I also hear answers. But my brother-in-law understands the answers. Follow, he became a chassid. You follow that? With all the fighting, he became a chassid of the seventh Rebbe. Not his mother. The mother-in-law, not his mother-in-law. She refused. She never became a chassid of the seventh Rebbe. He became a chassid. You follow? But this is a satma speaking. Well, what kind of idiocy is this? This is idiocy and plain thievery. And you can go on and on. They described, here's another guy speaking, former Malach, talking about Lubavitch. Something where I belong is transferred into a phony business. Basically, it's a cult with a cult personality leader. It's Jewish televangelism. It's a Jewish Jimmy Baker. Chabad, 100 years ago, meant self-discipline and worship to God. Today, it's been transformed into a fundraising company. He tries to pretend that he's a thief, that he's a saint, but he's a plain thief. Wow. The main thing about Lubavitch is that it's a Jewish version of televangelistic movements. There is no doctrine. The doctrine is that their money surpasses everything. And he goes on and on. The main thing they're doing is raising funds, trying to make themselves richer and richer. They take stock of funds for charity, and they're not known for giving stucca. They take stucca. They're very good in collecting money. The work they do is minimal compared to the amount of money they collect. And this goes on and on. I've made my point. I have to tell you that this quote, very hard to defend. Very hard to defend. And I'll tell you why. The Lubavitch Rebbe died. I saw the document left filed for his estate. The man was poorer than anyone sitting in this room. When the seventh Rebbe died, I can tell you, yes, right now, George and all the supporters, they're raising billions of dollars. They spend billions of dollars. And I can tell you this, Eidut Nemana, you go all over the world, they invite you, there's no course, there's shuls. All right, you want to contribute, it's what you want to do. There's no membership. They have, in America, and one of the big Chabad Chassidim, Shluchim in America, Rabbi Lesri, makes a very golden point that they have taken over what conservative Judaism has pushed away. Conservative Judaism became, you have to join the temple, pay a fortune. So people still want to be Jewish. They go to Chabad. I have relatives. Their whole connection with Yiddishkeit is they go to Chabad when they need a shul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, any other time. And Chabad is a proper shul. Say what you wish. And I told you the story of Joe DiMaggio and Moshe Engelberg, who Joe DiMaggio's right hand, his lawyer, his accountant, he left his whole will in the hands of Joe DiMaggio, only trusted Jews. And when I met Engelberg the first time, total conservative temple, I smacked his face. I said, how can you be? You grew up in Borough Park, your mother is a tzaddikit, your mother was the legendary secretary of Flatbush Yeshiva, you had Rebbeim, and how can you be in a conservative temple? And he answered me, it's a classic answer which I'll never forget. All I remember from Yeshiva Ketana is that the Rebbeim beat me with a ruler. When I met him 20 years later approximately, I couldn't believe what I see. You walk into his office, all that he's concerned with is Lubavitch, the shul he opened, the shul he sponsors, the Beis Medrash named after his father, the Friday night meal once a month open to the public. Very hard to accept what was written here, but this is what a Satmar Chassid thinks, and you can see the tension, you can see the depth. Now, some of their complaints, a literacy mind can understand. They put a picture of the Baba Tzur Rebbe up there at every bris. They put his picture behind the bed when the person is sick. They do as idol worshippers do. All right, this is a little hard. Every wedding, a Lubavitcher wedding, they read a letter from the Rebbe. Of course, that letter was written 50, 60 years ago to someone getting married. But it's like the Rebbe's there. The letter at the wedding I have less of a problem with, because I can understand. They can read the letter and give it the date and say the Rebbe once said this to a Chatan V'Kala, what he said 60, 50 years ago is just as appropriate today as it was then. That I can understand. But I can understand this criticism, the picture, the crib, the little kid. My Litvisha mind doesn't accept it. There are more on Satna's side than on Lubavitch. But overall, how can you make these statements? Lubavitch, money, they have done for the Jewish people. It's beyond comprehension. Okay, my dear students, there's no question the depth of Lubavitch and Satna, the 70s into the 80s, it hit an all-time high crescendo. Today, it's a very different ballpark, as we'll see next week. We have to remember there's no Satmarov alive, or no Satmar with the impressive record of Rav Yoel Ish, and there's no Lubavitcher Rebbe alive, number one. Number two, time has moved on. Realities are realities. Lubavitch is here to stay, and Satmar is here to stay. The State of Israel is here to stay. And this has given us an entire new configuration, an entire new coloration of the contemporary scene and situation. And we'll see next week. Next week is a very fascinating class, very fascinating shayur lecture of visiting Satmar, literally going there hand in hand and seeing what Kiryat Yoel palm tree is about. Okay. To reiterate, what have we done? Well, yesterday we were in a different world, which we'll pick up next Sunday. I already got some very fascinating emails and a whole confirmation of something I described to you yesterday. I now have an eyewitness who confirms I'm correct. But we'll leave that for next Sunday. What did we do today? Well, we finished up the 70s, the 80s, the infighting. We had some real cases. There's a lot more detail involved because they really tried to prosecute the people who cut off Rabbi Korf's beard and the people who persecuted Rabbi Wechter, but nothing came out of it in court. Ultimately, they couldn't even, there was one case with a jury, but they couldn't prove who people who attacked. And you have to remember to Spiro Agnew, if I paraphrase him, if you've seen one beard, you've seen them all. Remember his famous comment. So paraphrasing it, I can understand the jury would have trouble differentiating between this one and the next one. And by the way, I don't know today, but there was a whole black market of passports around the Frum community in Israel, the Haredi world, people buying passports, people who were not allowed to leave Israel, couldn't come back to Israel, but passports with a beard, I know actual cases. Today, I don't think you can do it because the passports are more sophisticated. Am I right? They're biometric. Yeah, today it's more, you can't do it. But where they actually used the passport, one beard, another beard, they got through, they went in and they went out, even though technically they were not allowed. But it's a sad story. And you see the depth of the enmity when you see the Lubavitcher's talk and the Satmar's talk. But you see the depth, but it touches upon real problems. Satran's not the first one to raise the question of all the pictures of the Rebbe and being sold and being put up and the idol worship, etc. I can understand that criticism. I much rather prefer Lubavitcher, who has one picture of the Rebbe and not 20. But if they know Fawlty Towers by heart, I can take the pictures with a grain of salt. Okay, are there any questions here? All right, so let me sign off and thank you for participating and warming up the room. And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. And I want to say, see, Vic Snow isn't here. Vic, if you pick this up, I hope you have good news this week and your sister is doing better. Yoma, open it up to the world.
Two things to add.
You want it? 1 second. Yeah.
No, Avas Yisrael. Satmar has Avas Yisrael. Lubavitch has
Avas Yisrael.
And the second thing, they complain about the money. I've never seen in the newspaper Lubavitch Hasidim being accused and prosecuted.
All right, that I should have said. That what's amazing,
all over the place.
What's amazing about Lubavitch is that they have had very, very few scandals. There was now a scandal with Lubavitch with cheating on the American government with the false tax receipts, right? He went to jail from Poway. But that's few and far between. And you got to give them all the credit in the world. You take someone like Shlomo Kunin on the West Coast, hundreds of millions of dollars have gone through his hands. I guarantee you he didn't keep one penny.
No, I see all... No, I go to all these crazy places. The Rebbe has gone, bigger. I've gone to these little small places. I see what's happening with these guys and what they do.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Right, and they're totally meisa nefesh. Right. All right, I agree. You're absolutely right, Morty. Okay, is it open to the world? Vic?
No comment other than O'Malley for the Dodgers to L.A. Giants move to San Francisco.
Oh, thank you. I stumbled on that, and I thought I was wrong, but no one corrected me. And as a matter of fact, they said San Francisco here. So, the Dodgers moved to L.A., the Giants to San Francisco, and that's when my belief in baseball came to an end. And today you see, it's all, take a look at Aaron Judge. I want to tell you, as a sports fan with a little knowledge, if Aaron Judge has any seichel, he'll remain with the Yankees. He'll have a fabulous career. And he'll go on to become one of the all-time greats that 100 years from now, they'll be talking about Aaron Judge. But if he moves on like Robinson Cano, he's going to be a failure. All right, let's see if my words
are... As soon as they moved away, my father rooted against the Dodgers.
Okay.
He used to call the street outside Empire Boulevard.
Empire Boulevard. But it's Empire EM. It's not Empire.
He used to call it Empire Boulevard.
Empire Boulevard. Okay, I hear. Vic, how is your sister? Holding her own? Any improvement? I can't hear. Yoma, why can't I hear Vic? But okay.
Baruch Hashem, she's making progress, thank God.
Okay, I am very happy because
thank you so much.
It's a very good hospital. So it's one of the best in Israel. You follow? And I've heard miracle stories from that hospital. So halavai, halavai, hala. We should only
amen.
Have good news.
Thank you, Reb.
Amen, amen. Anyone else have a comment?
I think it should be said that today was a wonderful lecture.
Oh, thank you. Now, listen, it's a question of getting at the sources, but what was good about today is I wasn't speaking. It was the Lubavitcher speaking and the Satmar speaking. And this is what they think. And this is not a historian or a sociologist trying to guess. We're not guessing history. Here, these are people speaking. And this is what they really thought. And, these are humans. As Aaron Rakefet, from my background, I side with Lubavitch. But I have to say, when they talk about putting the Rebbe's picture in the crib, which I've seen, or the Rebbe's picture in the carriage. I don't know. Yitzchak, could you picture someone putting the Rebbe's picture into the carriage? It's not. It's beyond our comprehension. Come on. What? So there I'm more inclined, Satmar has it right. But on the total picture, no question, Satmar, the Avat Yisrael, and the dedication, I mean, would you move to a place where there's no kosher food and you're makbar on Chalav Yisrael? And I can tell you, halacha l'maisa, this is Lubavitch. They go and they start from nothing. And when I saw Moshe Engelberg, and 20 years later, instead of a conservative temple, this Lubavitch's shul that he helped open, they took over an old, I think it was an old conservative temple, turned it into a frum shul. And he puts his money in there with his wife and his daughters. They all go along. Kala kavod to Lubavitch. They know how to reach out. They know how to influence. I stand in awe. We have to clean out the room here. The next class is coming in. I want to thank everyone for their participation. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das v'Danya.